Hi folks, Brian here. Couple exciting announcements. One is that this Sunday, June 23rd at 1 p.m. Pacific, we are doing a live stream for people who are on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/latenight. So if you want to watch that, it's going to be a fun thing. Go over to the Patreon, sign up over there at any tier, and you'll have access to that, as well as the video version of this episode with the amazing Steve Spahn and all the other video episodes we've done over the more than four years we've been a podcast. So come see the live stream this Sunday, and thank you so much for your support. Now enjoy another riveting episode of Late Night with Brian Wecht.
I believe it's called showmanship.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
The thing we all have in space. Yes, of course.
Yeah. That's definitely us, all of us, for sure.
Yeah.
All three of us with our different hats.
Yes.
So glad we chose hats today.
Steve, I can't see what is going on with your hat. It's a little. Is that
That's Rocket Raccoon. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
great.
Yeah. So true story. My favorite story about this hat is this is sort of like my uniform at this point. I've literally been wearing it for the 7 years I've been streaming. It's not the same hat. I keep buying the same hat again. But it's a Rocket Raccoon hat. So it's 100% Disney, Marvel logo, you know, like copyright, all that. I literally did a Logitech shoot where we were announcing some mouse or something, and they had a crew out to my house. I had like a Iron Man hand behind me, a Captain America shield, a Thor hammer. Like, they made us move all of it, and they forgot one. So they digitally had to go through and remove one of my memorabilia behind me. But they left the hat in the commercial. You can still go look it up. So I'm still wearing the hat. I'm like, well, they didn't mention it. I thought it.
Yeah.
What was the thing that you were doing for Logitech? Like, what was the commercial?
We were doing for when they did the Logitech adaptive gaming kits. I was one of the people that they flew out to like premiere it and all that.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, this was a while ago, but it was fun. Pre-pandemic times, back when we used to be in the same room with someone. That was cool.
Yeah, strange to think that the year is now 2024.
Yeah.
Makes me tired.
Right?
Yeah, I still have no... Actually, I was looking at something today, and it referred to a movie... that was out in 2018. Leighton, what's going on with your...
My camera's unfocused. I'm trying to... Like, my hand's in focus.
This is how you talk to a camera. You put your hand to it.
You can't see me. I'm doing a full you can't see me. Why is it doing this?
Oh, my God. Is that John Cena?
There we go.
Okay.
I want to talk about the John Cena thing. I had, for years... and this is going to make me seem like a total idiot. I thought he was just waving, like a backwards wave, like, hi, everybody.
Oh, no.
And it was his way of waving to people. I don't know anything about it. Before I knew who the guy was, like, when he was just kind of coming up as a wrestler or whatever. So I remember seeing these ads for him, I don't know, on USA or something like that. And I remember talking to Rachel and talking about the John Cena reverse wave. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's his trademark.
Wave.
Yeah. I thought it was just his cute little, hi guys, how's it going? You know, everyone has their thing, right? I was like, I didn't know what his...
Brian, you were going to say something about 2024 before
it was nothing interesting.
John Cena's
it was just
reverse waving.
Yeah, I was just saying a thing referred to a movie that came out in 2018, Bohemian Rhapsody. And, the sense of time, I'm just going to say a cliche, my sense of time is completely shot. I have no idea what anything happened anymore. Things that happened 5 years ago, it could have been last year or 10 years ago, and I have no idea. And what's interesting to me is it's not just like pre-pandemic, post-pandemic. It's that all sense of time has gone out the window for me. Do you guys feel the same?
I did. Yes. Yeah. I joke with my friends all the time that I feel like I'm at the age now where everything happened about 5 or 6 years ago. It doesn't matter when it was. When was 1993? 5 or 6 years ago. When did The Matrix come out? 5 or 6 years ago. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
100%. I cannot believe. Speaking of Matrix, isn't this the 25th anniversary of The Matrix?
It is. Yeah, it's been out for a long time. Yeah.
That is so fucked. Like,
right?
I don't know. Now, Leighton is but a wee child, Steve, so she probably doesn't have this yet. But you're what, 40-ish? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And I are both 40 exactly, and no more than that.
That's exactly right. Yeah. But things that to me happened in my, you know, late 20s seem like, if there's any justice in the universe, that should have just happened. Like, yeah. I don't know, 5 years ago or something. Yeah. But now that I am 49, that is no longer the case.
Yeah, I don't know, Leighton, if you have this problem with like age discrepancy, but it's like, especially with music, like it's a big thing for me. Like I'll hear a music like that I, you know, like, oh man, I love this song and I haven't heard it for a bunch of years, and I can start belting it out even though it probably replaced something important, like how to do algebra, and like you know, and I'm like, also like 5 years ago my chat will be like, that's 20 years old, dude, and I'm like, damn it, what the.
Yes. And also, when you work with younger people, as Steve, you and I both do, you start to really feel the lack of similar pop culture backgrounds. Here's one that got me. Now, I believe we've talked about this on the show, Leighton, but I could be wrong. Is I remember being in the Game Grumps office a few years ago, I think even pre-pandemic, and I mentioned the TV show Quantum Leap. One of my all-time favorite shows.
Amazing show.
Nobody in the office had even heard of it. People,
that doesn't sound right.
Like, you know, it wasn't like two people that you don't know well. It was like a bunch of friends from the Game Grumps office, and nobody knew what I was talking about. And I thought, not only was this it wasn't like the most popular show at the time, but it's kind of nerd canon, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a big deal. It's Scott Bakula. It's a fucking Scott Bakula, Dean Stockwell show. Right. It's got, you know, big nerd people in it. And, you know, sure, it was on in the early 90s, I think. Nothing. And I was like, how the fuck is this possible? With this group specific, if you put me in like frat row and I started talking about Quantum Leap and they were like, what's that? I wouldn't be surprised. But at a fucking Let's Play channel?
I'm shocked by that, because our friend group is just a repository of obscure nonsense, and Quantum Leap is mainstream.
Steve, when you were growing up, what were your foundational like shows, media, that kind of stuff?
It's funny about your story, because I was thinking, if you had said that but the subject was Sliders, I would have been like, you know what, okay, because I love that show. But I realized that I was just like the small niche that loves like wormholes and time travel, so that's not everybody, you know. Quantum Leap is much bigger. But
have you heard of Sliders, Leighton?
I have not.
Well, it's been great being here. Take care, everybody.
there was a spate of shows. Again, I'd say like early 90s was Sliders, which was like, was that a Fox show? I feel like it might have been.
It was like in the X-Files time
era. VR5, of course, right? Mm-hmm. These like sci-fi kind of, not quite basic cable, but not too far from it. Sci-fi shows before like mainstream nerdery was a thing. And the idea with Slider, can you guess, Leighton, what was Sliders about?
Well, the concept of Sliders is so inextricably linked to the like amateur sport of sliding, as originated at Knott's Berry Farm of the course. Sliders of Ghost Town.
Not Scary Farm.
Excuse me. Yeah. So Sliders.
So your only clue would be where I said earlier, wormholes.
And sci-fi, yeah.
They're sliding through time?
Not quite.
What are they doing? Why
Steve,
are they sliders?
Do you want to take this
one? So like a slide? Yeah,
so essentially the idea is that it was playing with Michio Kaku's string theory idea. So essentially they were always on Earth, and they would go through these portals, and the portals would take them to a different version of Earth where things had gone completely sideways. And it was very much in that same Quantum Leap thing where they were trying to go back to figure out what went wrong in this version of Earth so that they could help fix it and then get back to the next version. And so they were constantly, you know, Stargate jumping to the next Earth. And it was a fantastic show. Very A-team, very like, you know, saving the world, really cool kind of thing. Except for the final episode, they ended on a cliffhanger with seemingly no way that they got out of it alive.
With Quantum Leap did as well. right? Another, not even so much of a cliffhanger as an unresolved. It was less of a cliffhanger, but it was this unresolved thing because I thought the show was going to go on and then it didn't. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of Quantum Leap ended famously with a card where they spelled Sam Beckett's name incorrectly. They just put up a card that was like, and Sam Beckett never got home. End of story. And you're like, and they spell it wrong, which is so insulting. I do
want to. Poochie died on his way back to his home planet.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I would be remiss if I did not comment on the Michio Kaku thing. Michio Kaku is string theory was my particular subject of expertise when I was a scientist. We cannot give Michio Kaku credit for string theory. Michio Kaku is a known, how should I put this, exaggerator of science communication. And what can I say about Michio Kaku? Is not well respected in the science community as a person who says true things.
Ooh, go off, Brian.
Yeah.
He likes sound bites.
Yes.
But if you say the name, you normally can at least get someone to pay attention, like, oh, a smart person said this.
That's right. He's a public intellectual for sure. He's very like telegenic and he's a great like talking at the camera guy for sure. But he's a guy who it's interesting. I don't want to, you know, throw too much shade at him, but he had some good papers in like the 70s and then kind of moved into the more like science communication kind of thing, but is not considered to be one of the foremost string theorists in the world.
Unlike you, so, Brian Wecht.
Well, that's true. I wonder who has more citations, me or Michio Kaku. I'm going to look this up right now.
Oh boy.
Let's throw this down.
This is the academic throwing it on the table exercise right now.
I bet it's him. Let's look. Okay, here he is.
I've got a knife ready to slice this humble pie for you, Brian.
This looks competitive. Okay, here we go. We got it. All right. So Michio Kaku has 3,061 citations. I don't think I'm going to get there.
You have like 500, right?
Let's see. What do I have?
I'm assuming it's 3,062.
What do I have? 3,832.
Oh, so you are more famous. Let's go.
Wow.
Fuck yeah, baby.
Brian, I'm genuinely impressed.
Yeah, suck it, Michio.
That's right, yeah. Now, it's possible I'm using this website wrong, but I don't think so.
To make you feel better if yours was less, which is what I fully expected, I was say, but how about your WikiFeed scores?
Well, no, I don't think his feet are online at all, which is a travesty. Because, look, I've seen Michio's feet, and they're banging.
My favorite thing about, scientists who are in the public eye, scientists themselves don't necessarily like or even necessarily get along with, at least it does bring the subject to mass media, and that's I'm very grateful for. Like, I don't always love the things that the people that get up in the camera, elected, you know, representatives do. I think we all have some issues with various people along the way, but I do love that, like, again, the string theory thing, not his, but it got people talking about it for a long time, and it was not something a lot of people heard about before that, so...
100%. Yeah. Brian Greene is another with that. Like, absolutely. Anything that brings these ideas to the public there's definitely something good there. I do wish that these ideas were, shall we say, reported accurately. Because it's a double-edged sword, right? You can say, hey, here's this idea. But if you're saying crazy incorrect things about it, like with string theory specifically, now I'm about to really go off here.
Nerd hour, let's go.
Before I do that, this is Late in Night with Brian Wecht. My name is Brian Wecht. Over here we have
Leighton Gray in clear HD quality for now.
Yeah,
mystery guest, who are you?
My name is Steve Spawn and I like string theory.
Hell yeah.
Welcome, Steve.
Two-time
welcome
guest.
Back.
Welcome back, indeed. We're happy to have Steve back. Steve, can you say something else about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I am the guy that bugs Brian to come do things at my gala, supporting people with disabilities. I've been an advocate now for 20 years, and I often get invited onto podcasts to talk about accessibility and disability and how to make the world a better place for people who need adaptations. But Brian keeps going, hey, you want to come talk about not accessibility? And I was like, yes. How much do I have to pay you? And he was like, a nominal five-figure fee. And I was like, you're in. Here's my bank account. So here I am.
And so here you are. Yes. And once the check clears, we can start recording.
Oh, man, fantastic.
Before we'll maybe talk about this more later, but I was on tour with NSP, and I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, Planet Money, and I was so I don't think I told you this part, Steve. They had a show on accessibility in gaming, and I saw the title and I heard them talk about it, and I was like, if they don't fucking mention able gamers on this shit, I'm gonna lose my mind. And I was listening to it in the shower in Cleveland, as I do. I often listen to podcasts in the shower. And whose voice comes on while I'm in the shower but Mr. Steve Spahn here? And Steve, I believe I DM'd you from the shower. I was so excited to hear your voice.
True.
I had my phone right there. I was on a little ledge. Now, the way some shower, you know, you can't get your phone too wet, so you gotta like find a place to put it. But I had it right there, and I DM'd you something like, oh my God, I just heard you on Planet Money or something like that. But that was a shower DM.
You put your phone in the shower?
Well, I don't normally. Okay, so not at home, I don't. But
when he's talking to me, he does.
That's right. So. Yeah, I always keep my phone next to the shower in case Steve DMs. In this particular case, you know, you don't have much personal space when you're on tour, right? And so I just wanted to take a shower in this venue and listen to a podcast. There was a new episode of Planet Money. There was a little ledge, like far enough away from the water that it wasn't going to get splashed, but in the shower. Now, if you put the phone too far out of the shower, sometimes you can't hear it, right? So it's like, it's a little bit of a game. So I put the phone on the ledge up in the shower, not near the water. And that is where, you know, you aim at the speaker at the wall to get a little bounce. And that is where I was listening to this particular podcast.
I respect it. Yeah. Those wet fingers writing a very wet DM.
Yes.
Oh, it was so hot. I'm telling you. Yeah. I listened to you on NPR. Ooh, yeah, tell me more.
Yeah. It was pretty hot, actually. But
now, Brian, you were winding up to go off about something.
Oh, yes. Mm. Okay. I'm going to talk about string theory for a minute here. So, string theory, you know, was a little bit of history. There was an idea for what if, you know, we had a quantum version, and don't worry about what that means if you don't know, but like a theory of strings. When people were unclear when people tried to figure out what was going on with like what eventually became quarks, one idea that happened was it's kind of a theory of strings, and all these different particles are like different modes or whatever of vibrating strings. And so people in the 60s looked at like string models, and it turned out to not be the correct theory of what became quarks. All right. And the idea, you can sort of see why they might become strings, because there's a particle called a meson, which is made up of two quarks. Now, you can't pull out an individual quark. That's just a kind of law of physics. But a meson is a quark and an antiquark. And if you pull them apart, you kind of get a little like binding energy between them. And as you pull them farther apart, they sort of look like a little string. You've got the quarks on either end and then some like filament of energy between them. And so there's one plausible argument for why people thought, oh, maybe this is like a string thing, but it didn't end up being the right theory of these particles. The right theory of these particles ended up being, hey, there's some smaller particles which are quarks, and they're making up these things. So a little while after that, people said, actually, what? Let's go back to that string idea. What if instead of a theory of these particles, that was a theory of a quantum theory of gravity? Because they noticed that there was a massless, use some technical term, a massless spin two particle, which doesn't exist as a thing you'd see in a particle accelerator. It doesn't exist anywhere in nature. However, it is exactly the particle you'd need to mediate the gravitational force called a graviton. So someone comes back and they say, what if this particle was a graviton and this was actually a theory of gravity? Okay. So they start to take that idea seriously. There's some major problems with it. And then around the early 80s, they figure out how to fix one of the major problems with it, and it becomes a plausible theory for gravity, and people call it string theory. Okay, so that's string theory. The interesting thing about string theory is it's only consistent with a bunch of new particles that we haven't seen yet, and in 10 spatial dimensions, which is a problem. So, but what's nice about it is you can accommodate the kind of entire framework of known particle physics and gravity in this one theory. So for a long time, but like from the mid-80s through the, present, pretty much, people have said, oh, string theory is a theory of everything. Right. You can accommodate every single thing in it. We don't know how we get this particular four-dimensional universe with the particles we see out of it, but it's a theory of everything. And the thing I'm going to go off about is people went so fucking apeshit with this idea that it's the theory of everything that it caused a massive backlash because people were saying really outrageous, incorrect, what ended up being incorrect claims. But even at the time, we're probably way overly optimistic, like, hey, we have this idea of string theory. It's really cool. We're just going to get all of known physics out. We, you know, we'll have it in like 5 years. We'll be done. That'll be physics. And nothing like that happened at all. So a big problem with string theory that modern string theorists are still paying for are these people who went out and made kind of crazy claims about what the theory was and could do, none of which ended up being true. Like, we don't even know in string theory why there's a four-dimensional universe that pops out. You can arrange things, but there's no obvious mechanism to get from 10 dimensions to four dimensions. So we don't know if string theory is right. It's a candidate for a quantum theory of gravity, but we don't really know if it's correct or not. And there's a lot of backlash from people, you know, string theory is not science. It's not testable. It's bullshit. It's not really true. But I am, as a string theorist, as someone working in the field, there were these people who were, the backlash was so extreme, all because these irrationally exuberant people in the mid 80s were making crazy claims. And that always rubbed me the wrong way. That's what I wanted to go off about.
How much of it is a packaging issue of if you call something the theory of everything, doesn't that feel like an overpromise, underdeliver?
Yeah, 100%. Because, yeah, okay. Once you give it that name, and also some, by the way, some people called the theory of everything the TOE, which is just fucking dumb. Don't do that. It's a bad acronym.
I thought according to Dan Brown, it was no gut, no glory.
Yeah, there is that. That's a grand unified theory, which is different than the theory of everything.
But he conflates the two in the bestseller, mm-hmm. Angels and Demons.
That's right. Yes, he does. So people were making these like wild claims and calling it a theory of everything and saying all this stuff that, I mean, I guess in one version, maybe that was going to happen. But there were, even at the time, huge problems that never got resolved to anyone's satisfaction.
And it also opened up some cool ideas, though, like for the seven people that are still listening after all that.
That's why they call it Late Night with Brian Weck.
In the public-facing side of science, where people can vividly dream and wildly dream, they came up with all these cool ideas about, you know, well, what if, like, there are versions where you have a difficult decision to make, and in fact, you made one, but in a different dimension, you made the opposite choice. And what would have happened in that universe? And so the idea is that the universe could keep splitting. Every time someone makes a difficult decision, it makes another version of your universe. The problem, of course, with that is then infinite universes creates, like, you know, a gazillion Brian Wecks, which sounds cool, but then there's a lot of ninjas, a lot of
sounds
people.
Sounds hot as hell, honestly.
Yeah. So
DMing you from the shower.
All DMing me. Yep, in every universe. Some of those universes, it gets really good. But they're all theories that may not hold water, but some of them are just fun to think about. And I find that those are the ones I like because they get kind of fence-sitting scientists into it. Like, you can, like, say something kind of, like, over the top. And that's kind of where, like, people like the Neils and the Michis and whatnot get, you know, sound bites and real scientists like Brian get upset, and part-time scientists like me who just like the coolness of science like it because it draws in people who otherwise are like, what? And they're falling asleep, you know?
Yeah, so. The multiverse thing in particular is interesting. There's some string theorists like Brian Green who think that is true. There are others who think that's not a scientific theory and there's no way to test or say it. Say it in a sensible way that doesn't just give you infinity for everything. That's an open area of discussion. And I think it's all fine as long as you are honest about what you can and can't say. It's fine to say, I think this is right and I'm trying to show it, as opposed to, you know, in science, it's not about what you believe. It's about what you can show. And I have no problem with if Michio Kaku is like, hey, there's one version where we think this happens. That is not what he does. He just says, you know, he makes these grandiose claims that are just not true or at best accepted by such a vanishingly small fraction of scientists that they might as well be, you know, they're just extreme minority opinions. But even that, I think, is being too generous to him. I think he just says stuff that's wrong.
So the one of the interesting things is the idea of string theory as the multiverse gateway is supposed to solve the problem that psychologists still do not fully understand what the sense of deja vu is. They think it's some sort of your brain recognizes the patterns of somewhere that you've been before, so it tries to extrapolate what's happening, so you get this weird sense that it has happened before, even if it never has. But they're not really entirely sure what the phenomenon is or why your brain does it. And that was sort of one of their claims was, well, maybe this is the thing that we can't psychologically understand.
That is definitely not true, that it has any, that string theory has anything to do with consciousness or whatever. There might be some people who espouse this notion, but
people who fully buy into the Mandela effect human memory is famously infallible, therefore it must be that we're remembering it different, that the Fruit of the Loom logo was different.
the idea, and understand this, I think, from a what you call a separation of scales in physics, mm-hmm. that a string theory type physics only really starts kicking in at very, very tiny distance scales, which are much smaller than anything that would be going on in your brain, right? Brains are atoms and molecules. String theory is 10 to the minus, you know, whatever, 30-something centimeters. Tiny, teeny, tiny scales. And there's no way that anything happening at that small scale would explain something going on in your brain. So you know those have to be different phenomena. This is something that happens a lot in physics, is you try to figure out how, you know, what one scale is, you know, what scale a given problem is. If you're talking about, you know, general relativity on a cosmological scale, it's very unlikely that there's going to be some string theoretic process that's affecting things right now. So you have to, I would say and people in the 60s, there's this great book, which maybe I've talked about in the show, called How the Hippies Saved Physics by David Kaiser, I believe, which was about a bunch of people in the 60s at Berkeley trying to understand how quantum mechanics explains ESP. Turns out, if you ask me, ESP doesn't exist. Different people, you're welcome to disagree on that, although you are wrong.
I don't know, Brian, it sounds like if you do enough drugs that it becomes real.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm just saying, Peter Venkman pretty much convinced me it's true. So
that's right. About 8 o'clock. But that led to questioning some fundamental principles of quantum mechanics that led to interesting results and blah, blah, blah. They didn't come anywhere close to explaining anything that had to do with consciousness or ESP, but they did come up with some interesting physics, which had to do with questioning assumptions of quantum mechanics. Cool.
Do you know, I don't even know the answer to the main question. Do you know, did those showrunners who did the movie Deja Vu, is that where they got that there was a portal, like a window where you could look back in time? Because that was the plot of the movie Deja Vu, was look back, but it had to be 3 days prior, exactly 3 days. No more, no less.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I wonder where they got the jump from that, because people have been trying to tie Deja Vu and time jumping in some sort of dimensional reality together for as long as I've been alive.
Yeah, I mean that it's a cool idea for a science fiction thing. Yeah,
I wonder though. Do you think like that's where sometimes showrunners get like Hollywood ideas? Is they look at scientific theories, but nobody believes in, and they're like, okay, but what if it was real?
100%. Oh yeah, I'm sure they do. They're very inspired by that sort of stuff. I mean, I think they should be. I think it's awesome to take these one of my favorite shows, Fringe, which I love Fringe, does this sort of thing all the time. And I think to great effect, but you know, they're basically like, what if all this weird shit was true? And they try a bunch of different things. That's have you watched Fringe, Steve?
Yeah, it's like Mythbusters for nerds. Yeah, it's great.
Got it, yeah. Fringe is awesome. I just rewatched it recently, and it's fucking great.
I like the sarcasm in that show, too. There's a lot of biting sarcasm, too. Let's bring back Sci-Fi Channel, you know?
Yes, actually, 100%. Yeah, there was some really good stuff on Sci-Fi. You know, another show that people don't talk about much these days is Stargate SG-1, which is great. Like a really, really great show, at least for most of it. And then there are a couple spinoffs, which are fun too. But yeah, I like Stargate a lot.
What's like the current day equivalent of putting on Sci-Fi Channel or IFC and just letting it play in the middle of the day on a weekend and you're like half paying attention to what's going on?
YouTube?
Yeah, it's not quite the same though. No. Like, I'm surprised that we haven't had like channels showing up more of somebody curating what you are seeing from different sources instead of just like I am watching the entirety of a trial on Law and Crime Network YouTube or something.
That's a good question.
No, my allegiance transferred to like Hank Green, John Green, and you know, Open Source and stuff like that. That's, you know, mine really did go to YouTube after that kind of collapsed because there really was nowhere else to get that kind of, you know, sometimes silly, sometimes educational, you know, some mixing of the two. I mean, the Greens in particular do a great job of super silly, and then they hit you with something hard and factual. So
yeah, 100%. Yeah, they're both those guys are awesome.
And it's like with streaming, we've now basically reinvented cable packages, but we don't have the equivalent of like channel that you can put on and see some random shit, and also commercials that don't feel like they're causing you psychic damage, which is how every commercial feels now.
That's 100% right. I totally agree with that. If you put on cable, it's all, well, it's commercials for old people, right? Because old people are generally the only ones watching cable these days. And those commercials are all, you know, it's like we buy gold or, you know, very specific medications and stuff like that. But yeah, there's no equivalent that it's like a, so we have, for music, we have like Pandora or internet radio, which is easy. It bounces around. You don't really have control over what's playing. It just kind of goes. But yeah, there's nothing like that for videos, right?
Mm-mm.
Exactly.
Other than like algorithmically driven, which is not the same thing.
Although that is Pandora too, I guess. But it
are you a regular user of Pandora in the year 2024?
I am not, although I did just claim the artist profile for Go Banana Go, my kids' band, on Pandora because they started playing our stuff. But no, I don't use Pandora regularly at all, but people do. I mean, this is not
too
uncommon.
I
when I listen to music online, I will always pick what I want to listen to or turn on something radio, you know, on Spotify usually.
Okay, what is the deal with Spotify's shuffle, quote-unquote shuffle function?
Talk to me about this.
It's not a shuffle. It's this: you can go to the same playlist and hit shuffle. It will shuffle the same order of songs every fucking time.
Oh, it will? I didn't know
Why
that.
Do I pay for this? It's not a true, actual shuffle. And then it'll be like, we're going to stack these songs that you listen to all the time higher in all of your playlists. But also, we've been feeding you the songs that you hear on repeat because the shuffle is rigged. So, hey, that song that you don't really like that we just play constantly, it's going to be on all of your playlists now because we keep feeding it to you.
Yes.
Shuffle, please.
I didn't realize that about Spotify. That's interesting. So it picks an order. You go in, it randomizes an order, and then it just plays that order.
That's what the shuffle order is. Yeah.
Sucks.
I can anticipate what the order of songs will be.
Yeah, because isn't it? It's AI driven now, right? It's not actually random anymore.
Right.
Yeah. And I've seen other people talk, like, this is not a just me thing. It seems that this is across the board. It's garbage and shitification. Everything is more expensive and also worse. I love it.
Yeah. I didn't know that about Spotify.
Yeah, something about the shuffle tries to figure out what the correct brain pattern would be for inducing more happy attitude that will make you want to listen to music for a longer period of time by making the right BPMs per minute up and down like a DJ would do. I'm just like, what the, and then half the time, if you don't pay for it, you end up getting the new recommendations. So you have like a playlist of nothing but country songs, and they'll put on like new Metallica. It's like, I don't, that's not Spotify. What are you doing? So
Here's a number that I learned yesterday that I was interested. If you had to guess, okay, so the most popular artist on Spotify has how many monthly listeners? What would you get? I was way off on this when I was guessing this, and I'll tell you. The most popular artist on Spotify in terms of monthly listeners is, any guesses?
Taylor Swift.
Second. She's second.
Really? I'm guessing it's got to be Leighton.
Who is number one?
I would not have guessed this. The Weeknd is number one.
Really? Yeah. Good for him.
I knew he was very popular. I would not have guessed he's number one.
more popular than Taylor Swift on Spotify. I don't know, 500 million.
500 million, Steve, any guesses?
1 gazillion.
1 gazillion. It's so I also guessed like a few hundred million. It's like just over 100 million. It's like 110 million or something like that, which is, I guess, you know, that sure. But that's a, I mean, it's a sizable but not as big fraction of the world population as I would have guessed. Right?
I'm kind of shocked that Taylor isn't number one.
I was too.
Are there socioeconomic reasons for this? As like,
there must be.
Is he more likely to have people who would pay for a Spotify subscription but not buy a whole album, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think part of it is, if I understand the way Spotify works, which I don't really, if you're guesting on someone's song or whatever and you're on their page, the plays of that song, like let's say, let's say The Weeknd does a song with Taylor Swift, which may or may not be true. I don't know. When that song gets played, if they're both listed on it, they each get the credit for it. So the way you can get a lot of credits is by guesting on someone else's song, or like contributing to your monthly listeners is by guesting on someone else's song. And if that song blows up, then that shows that you have a lot of listeners.
Interesting.
As well. Yeah. So it's this kind of aggregate thing that I don't know. There is a back end for Spotify and you can see all your data and stuff like that. I don't know how easy it is to suss that out, although I think you definitely can see your top songs. Yeah.
What's Ninja Sex Party's top song on Spotify? Can I guess?
You can guess, although I can look at it right now.
Is it Danny Don't You Know?
Well, see, this is, I think overall it would be, but the question is that true right now? Which may or may not be true right now. Right, because we just had a new album out a couple months ago, so maybe it's one of those. But overall, definitely, it's Danny, don't you know? Yeah.
So where does it fit for those of you who don't know? T-Pain released a chart not too long ago. I think it was about 5 years ago, like we were saying, where he was putting like it's like 250. Streams on Amazon to make a dollar, 150 on Apple, like 1,000 on YouTube, something pitiful.
Yeah,
but he did not talk about Spotify.
Yeah, I forget exactly what the metric, what the pay is. It's a fraction of a cent per play. All right, right now our top song in the last 7 days is "Dance Till You Stop," which is the song we did with Tom Carty off the new
Tom
album.
Tom Carty.
So yeah, "Dance Till You Stop," "Welcome to My Parents' House," and then "Danny Don't You Know" are a top three in the last 7 days.
That makes sense. Every time that song plays on my music night on stream, it's immediately people are just like, "That's Tom Carty, yay!" So
he's the best. Yeah. He's so great. Yeah. He to me, he is like one of the most exciting things happening in comedy music, if not the most exciting performer, artist in comedy music. Today,
when you met him, did he point to you guys as one of the inspirations?
He didn't say that exactly, but he did say, he'd been a fan for a while. That's right. I have a specific series of ring kissing motions that people have to go through before I'll talk to them. He did say, he was a fan of NSP and liked what we did. But kind of everybody in comedy music like knows and is inspired by each other. It's a pretty small wheelhouse, although increasingly large, on TikTok and such. And also it depends what you define as comedy music, which I don't want to be uncharitable about and thus will not discuss further.
Wow. We hit a Brian wall. I've never seen one of those before.
Well, I don't want to just because something. Well, OK, I guess I can define genre, but just because someone is not doing something that is to my personal taste or is in some liminal space, like I put out an album, a smooth jazz album. Is that comedy music? I don't fucking know. Like sort of, not really. I don't want to diminish anyone's effort by classifying it as something they would be upset with.
I assume as the elder music ninja, you have to approve of everybody's ideas before they record them.
That's right. No, we get a lot of emails saying, can I record this? Yes, that's fine with me. Please go ahead. Yeah, that's right.
It has to pass the council.
Yeah. I was thinking, so Tom is an interesting case. We don't have to talk about this if you guys don't want to. I do feel like recently in the last year or so, for the first time, at like a definitive sense of being The way I do it is the old way with music. Like, we put out albums, we do YouTube videos. And that is not the way Tom or other people do it. It's like most of the people doing comedy music these days are doing it on TikTok, and it's like short form videos, which is a very different, and releasing singles, which is a very different thing than we do. And is this just a personal preference? Is this, we haven't moved on with the times? I think it's a little bit of both. I don't know. Maybe, you know, will we change? Probably not. But is that a bad thing? I think you could argue it either way. But I was really feeling in the last year or so, as this album was coming out, like, oh, people don't do this anymore. We're kind of the old guys.
Well, obviously, Danny at 78 years old. been around for a while. I don't know how you feel, Leighton, but for me, I'm not being a non-music guy. I'd love to get into music, actually, as I get older. I find a draw to it, but it's not... It seems like it's harder to not get ripped off. Even then, like, the music industry always seemed like one of those, like, man, you can get taken advantage of so easily. But then now with TikTok, you see it all the time on Twitter, where someone will post a video of someone on TikTok and get 50,000 retweets and 150,000 likes, and they're not that person. They just stole someone else's video, put it up, it went viral. So,
I mean, I guess if you want to get into it, it's like the accessibility of having like tools that are easy to, you know, learn for somebody who doesn't know anything about music, that I think that is an easy space to play around in to like learn tools. It's then once you get to the like social media fuckery that it becomes a different thing. But I think like that first tier of getting into it and actually making the music is probably, like, I've done some of that. It's fun, and I don't do it a lot, but it's, you know, it's a neat space to play around and like not worry about like, this has to be publicly consumable. It's nice to just kind of like get into something and suck at it privately.
Yes, and I love tools that enable people to create stuff, people who have taste but not talent, if that means anything. So with music, there are all these tools where, and by talent, I mean talent to play the thing, right? I think it's great that you don't have to be a talented instrumentalist these days to make music. That's awesome. That's why these tools exist. And you can get people who have, you know, who are like, oh, I like that chord. I don't know what it is, but I like it. And I like that, you know, real Rick Rubin types. Who may not know what they're doing. I think he overstates this, by the way. But like, who may not know what they're doing technically with an instrument, but can put things together in an interesting way, which is its own talent, to be sure.
Is it Post Malone that doesn't even know how to read music? Is that what I read?
That's entirely possible. Most people, Danny doesn't know how to read music. Like, and it's not, I think, to be a successful performing musician, depending on what you're doing, you don't really need to know how to read music. I think it's just a personal preference. Like with Dan, I found when we write NSP songs, he doesn't want to know anything about the music theory. He can't read music. He doesn't need chords. He doesn't know anything about it. And if you explain it to him, it gets him out of his zone, and he's like, it will make what he does worse. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is just the way the guy operates. So there, I mean, I guarantee you, some of the most successful musicians of all time have no idea how to read music or what chords are. They just kind of vibe it out, and that's great.
I love the story about Johnny Greenwood saying that when he joined Radiohead, he was just pretending that he knew how to play the piano.
I love that. It's awesome, right? It's like, and a lot of people I work with that don't know music theory like that. That stuff is interesting to me, but it doesn't mean I'm doing it the right way. I'm just doing it the right way for me.
I found that the music theory is one of the harder parts. Like, I found, like, about, I don't know, 9 months ago or so, my stream community got together and bought me Fruity Loops.
Awesome.
So I've been playing with it. I know it's super entry level, but I'm not a professional. I'm just playing around with it and making chords and having fun with it. And, you know, so then I was like, you know what? maybe this is what I want to do when I sunset my academic career, when I want to get out of, you know, advocacy. You know, maybe I should learn like music theory. And I really started looking into it, and I was like, my brain cannot stay on it. Like I literally started zoning out, and it's really hard. But yet, if you throw me in sort of an hour and a half video talking about different chord combinations and the way that they sound, I'm all into it. But the moment you start telling me why it has to be, you know, the 2-3-7 method, and this only has to go this method because it's the reason that you feel this, I'm just like, what? I don't.
Yeah, but I do not believe the. You feel like this chord progression causes you to feel that is, I think,
that's wild to me. Yeah.
I just don't buy it.
Like, some of them are like real, like, I know you don't look at tutorial stuff anymore because you're a professional now, but for like an amateur like me, like reading up on trying to learn, get better, it's like you get told, like, all right, these are the beats per minute, and this is the chord progressions you can choose for happy. That's it. These three.
Right.
Choose one.
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I was just kind of pushing keys and saw the sounded good. It's like, no, it's wrong. Yeah. Okay. Well,
no, but you're totally right. Like, it's not wrong. I there's a very popular type of YouTube video essay about music where they're like the happiest chord progressions in the world. I think it's all bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like it just makes no sense to me. I mean, I think generally speaking, major key is quote unquote happy, minor key is quote unquote sad, and there's some truth to that. But I really bristle at this, like, if you want to make people feel this, play this. It's like,
it's a turnoff because it takes away from I want to play around with this and see what feels good, sounds good, into you must do it this way. It's like, that was actually the exact same thing I ran into when I became an advocate. I was choosing between advocacy and writing, and I wrote a book and I loved it. But as I got more serious, I got told that there are certain steps you have to follow to do it repeatedly by a couple of high-end authors. And they were like, if you don't do it this way, you're an idiot. You can't write like that. And it turned me off so hard. There's one of the reasons I'm an advocate now, because I was like, I just wanted to write a cool book. I didn't want to, I don't want to have to be like, here's the scaffold, here's the beats. You know, you have to do this in this chapter. The mirror must be in chapter 3, paragraph 4, or else it's not a self-help book. It's like, what? Okay. I don't.
Yeah, it's all bullshit. I mean, and also those.
I mean, there's no faster way to kill any nascent passion that you might have for some form of art than being told here's the right way and 100%. Here's the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And like that, it can be such a lifelong damaging thing if you get exposed to that kind of thing early, of somebody being really hard line of like, don't draw this way, draw this way, or write, make music, et cetera, et cetera. Right. Like,
because also those rules then change the moment someone is successful with the quote unquote wrong way to do it. And then everybody jumps on that. It's like, no, the reason that was interesting, the reason people responded to it, is because no one else was doing it that way. They broke a rule or questioned an assumption, and now that thing popped off, and now you'll have people be like, oh, this is the right way to do it. Rules, any rules with art are bullshit.
Yeah, and there's a difference between that and like stuff that will make your life easier if you do it X way. Like, how many times have you run into something where like, in your craft, be it art or writing or music or whatever, where like, it's not that it's the right way, it's that if you do it this way, this will save you 20 headaches, you know, 2 weeks from now, because there is a more expedient way to do this. Like, it's less in terms of like the rightness or wrongness of how you're getting somewhere, and more just like,
yes,
don't make your life harder than it needs to be.
For me, this is all about file management. I wish someone had taught me fucking file management. I have no idea how to manage files. And I have friends like former producer of the show, Jarek, who were like, oh yeah, we studied that in school. Like how to save your files and name them and back them up. That was like part of it. And I'm glad no one told me this is the right way to do music or whatever. I wish someone had told me this is the right way to say it, like to structure your fucking hard drives. I wish.
The amount of files I have that are like critical important will never be done again. They're named Wii too. You know, like
yeah, 100%. Yeah, just naming. It's not even how to store them. Just what to name them that makes sense. It's my direct. And then here's the worst part about this: the older you get, the more this becomes a huge problem because you have to go back to your old files and try to find shit, and it is unthinkable. I have, you can probably, you might be able to see on this table behind me, there is a hard drive that, here's my dilemma. Okay. I have a 12 terabyte hard drive with 15 years of Ninja Sex Party footage on. I have to get that somehow down to a 4 terabyte hard drive by picking and choosing what things are of interest. All right. But on the 12 terabyte hard drive, there is zero organization on it. And it is, it's fucking killing me. It's the worst. And I don't, it's just, and there's no solution. I just have to knuckle down and do it or get someone else to do it.
Buy a bigger hard drive. Like Leighton and I could take like a collection. Yeah. We could get a bigger hard drive for you. You know, they exist.
Yeah.
You
know? I should. Yeah. That the easy way out. That's exactly right, Steve. Is just buy a bigger hard drive and then pawn it off to
get a dock for your, all your hard drives. Yeah. I know that was the thing I learned from Jarek of having a dock, which I continue to not have. I just have multiple hard drives and with no, like a vague semblance of organization. It's like, great. It's really useful that I have multiple hard drives with the massive folder desktop.
Oh my,
that was just everything that was on my desktop at whatever period I was changing. Like my desktop on this computer right now, good God. It's all icons, and to the point that like now it's doing the thing where there's like 20 files stacked on top of each other in each row because there are so many of them. And now that I do 3D art, where like having textures in the same place and named the same things is important. I'm in hell.
I had a friend once look at my desktop and he said, I think less of you now having seen your desktop because of how poorly organized it is. Sorry.
Okay, you're like, you're not wrong though. So,
no, he wasn't wrong. You know, I believe also this is actually one of the most devastating, like responses I've ever gotten. Like it felt like my mom again being like, Brian, what are you doing?
Well, speaking of Brian, what are you doing? Should we do segments?
Let's do some segments. That's a great idea. Moving on to segments. So our first segment on this show, Steve, is our pop culture recommendation segment. This is where you get to talk about something you've been enjoying recently, which is also what we've been doing for the last hour, but that's fine. It can be a book, a movie, a TV show, a video game, whatever it is. Culture both high and low. The name of this segment is What's Poppin'? And the theme song I insert in post, but it does go here.
What's poppin'?
What's poppin'? Great. Now, I'll ask you the question I probably asked you last time, which is, Steve, if you were to have heard that theme song, what would you have thought about it?
I would have been like, that is the most sexy Brian Weck song I've ever heard in my entire life, and that whoever got to listen to that should immediately pay him $35.
Well, I like that. That's a good, that's what I like about that amount is it's doable.
Yeah.
Right. And all you need is if everybody listening to that paid me $35, I'd be very happy.
Yeah.
I'd have almost $70.
Like, it's almost like for a living, Brian, I come up with numbers that might be reasonable for people to hand over. It's almost like that, isn't it?
Right.
I like the idea of having to pay a toll to hear a segment theme on this show.
Yeah.
There's no fast pass available. You just got to cough it up.
Mandatory paywalling. Yeah.
I mean, what if people got to choose like which segment that they wanted to hear first? What do you think they'd go for?
Oh, well, it's known amongst the fans of this show that the best segment is the What's Poppin', and the what they call the quote-unquote second segment on this show is Peaches and Lemons, which we'll talk about in a minute when we get
there. They call it that?
But
the second segment?
The second segment. And I asked, I was like, I remember asking this on our Discord, is that just because of where it is in the show? And they said, no, it's a reflection of the quality of the two segments and specifically the theme songs.
Well, I can't argue with that. I would generally agree with that assessment.
Yeah, we have a vocal fan base that loves to rank the segments on this show. Yeah. Leighton, what's pop?
I really wasn't ready for it that time, but I'll go nonetheless. What's popping for me is there is a little video game that I found on Nintendo Switch because I'm always looking for a new, you know, time sink, I'm in bed type game. And I found one called Sticky Business, which is an extremely cute little indie game where you create stickers and you it's like running a sticker shop simulator.
I think I live with someone that would like this.
Oh my God, Audrey would love this game. It has like a little creator and you can unlock like colors and little like stamps that you use to make your stickers.
I'm writing this down.
And then you get orders from people and then you can, you know, you have to manage how you're fitting everything on your printer sheet. Mm-hmm. And then you get to pack it and add little like goodies. Like, do you want to pay extra money to put candy in the package for this person? And you get the orders with like messages from the people who are ordering from your shop. God. So there's like light narrative stuff. I've been really, really enjoying it. So I highly recommend Sticky Business.
Sticky Business. I love it.
It's the ultimate cozy gaming experience if people listening like cozy games.
That's great. Steve, what's popping with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I am going to be the book nerd. As I alluded to, like, as I have done advocacy for 20 years now, I continue to go back and forth with what it is. I wanted to make a Brian break away from my current career path and go somewhere different. So trying to figure that out. And I am still so in love with the idea of that self-help guru kind of person, a one that doesn't try to just sell you a bunch of snake oil and tell you it'll make you better if you just read this book. Mm-hmm. And I have been reading the 10th anniversary of Brené Brown, who is so you know who she is. Later on, you know who Brené Brown is.
I do not.
She's a self-help guru who also has a PhD in psychology. So hers is not like get out of bed and do the thing. Like, it's actually like, you know, here's some, you know, psychology that will help you like figure out how to connect to people better, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it just came out with the 10th anniversary of her Gifts of Imperfection. And it's just this really cool audiobook, if you want to the audiobooks, where she goes through, she basically just talks about, you know, having that special place in your heart for people who, you know, have something that is a quirk, you know, that we have to love people for the things that make them different and imperfect, not despite them. And kind of goes through and teaches you like a little bit more about, you know, how to accept people for who they are. Your friend who's always late, you know, so stop thinking of it as, you know, I'm friends with them despite that they're 15 minutes late all the time, to whenever you want to hang out with them, make sure you tell them 15 minutes before you want to hang out with them, so that, you know, you're working with who they are, not in spite of them. And it's really kind of neat in like human psychology of this is how you should accept people for who they are.
Yeah, she's,
that sounds lovely.
I was vaguely familiar with the name, and I believe she was on Marc Maron like many years back. And that's how I was like, oh yeah, that lady. But she has a lot of books, right? She's done
a lot. She's got like 7 or 8 now, and they're all super number one bestsellers. She's good at writing, good at speaking. She's really, really good. If you ever want to watch a lecture series on like TED Talks, like she'll just like start talking about how a cop pulled her over before a speech in the middle of it. It's great. Like, you know, this they must have paid $150,000 to get her to come talk. And she's like, yeah, I just got pulled over by a cop, and you know, he was giving me the business and I offered him a donut. Like, she's really relatable.
Yeah. Cool.
I love that.
I love it.
Brian, what's popping?
What's popping for me is a browser game this week.
Ooh.
And this game is called NAND game, N-A-N-D game, and it's kind of a puzzle game, but you are building a computer. So you're building logic gates. They give you some fundamental circuits to work with, and you build the computer step by step by step by step. So first you build a NAND gate, which is when you have so you have two inputs. Let's call them A and B. And so you get this like truth table type thing where NAND means not and. So it gives you zero. It gives you one unless A and B are both on, and then it gives you zero. And then you build, you know, your other gates. You build an inversion. You build an OR. You build an XOR, exclusive OR, you know, and then you use those to build an adder, a 2-bit adder, a 3-bit adder, et cetera. And then you go up to building the computer. And it's a very fun, like, here's, you know, step by step by step, like, how do you make these things more complicated? And it's not easy. And it's probably the kind of thing, if you studied computer science, you would have studied at some point. But I really, really like it.
How did you find this? I'm looking at it right now, and it feels beyond
me. I saw someone, I think it was Leo Stein, who's a physicist, talked about it on Blue Sky as a, and there are other versions, you know, it's not the first version of this sort of game. I sent it to a friend of mine who is a like puzzle type dude, and he said it reminded him of Rocky's Boots, which is a 1983 game by Warren Robinette, who is famous for, he was the creator of the Atari Adventure game, like an early, you know, gaming pioneer, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And he created this game in 1983, which is kind of the same sort of thing. So this idea of gamify, making, you know, logic gates and stuff like that is really fun. But the NAND game is, it's challenging and it's really, really fun. It's very aesthetically pleasing as well. Just the design is good. And it's very simple. You just, you know, it's like a drag and click type thing.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I've been enjoying that.
Well, that is what's popping. Now it's time for the final, second, and inferior segment, which is three parts gratitude exercise, one part petty grousing. The name of this segment is Peaches and Lemons. And the theme song, up to you where it ranks on the list of theme songs, second. Listener, goes right here.
Peaches and Lemons. Peaches and Lemons. Great.
Well, that was a theme song.
Still a good one. Now, I want to be clear. It's not a bad theme song. It's just not as good as the What's Poppin' theme song.
It lacks a certain je ne sais quoi.
That's right. But I do know what it is.
All right. So we'll each start with a lemon, which is a minor bummer or annoyance. I feel like traditionally I go first, and I will indeed go first with my lemon. I ordered an Amazon package with, you know, one thing that I need and one thing that is a fun thing in it. And I got the notification that it was delivered, and I go outside and it is not there. Mm. And I check the app again and it says, was handed directly to the resident Tony.
Uh-huh.
No Tony's here. There's no Tony who lives in my complex. Hold on. Give me
is
one second.
Is that Tony?
Sorry. It might be Tony, actually.
All right.
Maybe.
It could be Tony. You never know.
I'm so sorry. How much of that did you hear?
We heard dribs and drabs. I heard, it sounded like it was exactly about your Amazon package, though.
It's literally exactly. It's my neighbor, who is the one who said that, he was like, yeah, I brought that package up. Like, he was knocking to talk to me about my stolen package that I was just telling you guys about. Oh. And then I didn't know how to politely tell him that I was in the middle of recording a podcast, because that felt too embarrassing to be like, hi, person I'm having a real interaction with. I'm actually recording a podcast. So sorry.
I think of this as a real interaction, by the way.
Right. Yeah.
It's just as real as anything else. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was my lemon. I apologize.
Wait, so what was that conversation about, though? You have to.
There was an additional package that I received that he was bringing me, but because he was speaking, knowing that like I can't move as quickly, so my dog was hearing his voice and freaking out. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. This is exciting. But
cool.
Kismet. Great timing.
Great.
Did you guys say your lemons while I was?
No,
gone?
We were waiting for you.
No.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah, because I wasn't
a lemon?
Clear your lemon was done. Like, it seemed like your
seems
lemon
like
was
an ongoing
in progress.
Lemon,
yeah.
To be honest. Yeah.
I mean, I how could I have known that my neighbor would come up to talk to me at the exact moment that I was complaining about the thing that he was coming to ask me about?
String theory probably had a lot to do with it.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. That's what Michio Kaku would say. Yeah. let's see. Lemon. Steve, you got a lemon for us?
Mine's a bigger lemon, but also Amazon related. I am so tired of Amazon trying to figure out new ways to shove ads into my life. I just wanted to watch Invincible. That's all I wanted to do, and I can't watch the freaking thing without watching 2.5 minutes of commercials or handing over $10.
And you're paying for it.
Right. I already paid for Prime. What the F?
Yeah. Yes.
So annoying. It's a very boomer complaint, but I'm like, listen, you already got my sub money. That's what this was for.
100%. I totally agree. I was watching something, I think it actually was Invincible, the other day on Amazon, and I'm like, didn't I pay to not have these ads? Yeah.
No, and it's the worst thing is it's in that range too that you're just like, you know, $9 if you can afford a subscription fee. An additional $9. Is it that much for you? Probably not. I'll say for some people, it's probably a lot. For most people, it's probably a nominal and annoying, but whatever. It's $9.
Yeah.
But also the principle of it just makes me stand on it and go, no, I'm not giving you an additional $9. You don't deserve it. You're not doing anything more for me. All you're saying is we're going to annoy you unless you pay us. That's called blackmail. I'm not letting you blackmail me.
Well, I was explaining to my daughter yesterday how Amazon Prime is a total scam anyway, because you get free shipping on products that have been marked up so much that you're basically paying for the shipping anyway. It's like, the whole thing sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But
Brian, what's your non-Amazon related lemon? And what are the odds that someone's going to come knock on your door to tell you about the lemon that you're about to say? Non-zero?
I would say no. The odds are pretty well. Nothing is non-zero. Anything that can happen might happen, but it's very low probability. Although, could anyone ask? Well, okay, I think my lemon is such that nobody would directly talk about this. But anyway, my lemon is that this is, I think, a common lemon among creatives. I hate asking for help with things, and it is very hard to ask for. It's not even favors exactly. It's just hard to ask for shit. And Steve, I know a big part, I was thinking about this today, because I know a big part of your job is like asking people for stuff. And so I kind of wanted to talk about this with you, because it is like, I remember seeing many years ago, and I wish I could remember the source. I feel like it might just be someone on Twitter. You know, the person said, whoever says it never hurts to ask is wrong. Every time you ask, it fucking hurts. And some people, it hurts less than others. But for me, I have this email that I've been meaning to write to ask for not even a big favor, a small favor. And I've been putting it off for literally months, because every time I sit down to type it, I want to curl up into a ball and hide.
Listen, whatever it is, Leighton will probably say yes. Just send the email, you know?
Well, this is here's the thing that really gets me, is when people come to me and ask for something, I will always try to say yes. Sometimes I can't do it, but I want to help. And if someone comes to me asking for a favor, generally I agree to it.
I'm gonna write that down for later and ask Ryan for money.
Well, of course, you've been a recipient of some of these as well, Steve. Right? You've asked me to help with some Able Gamer stuff, and I'm always happy to do it, because I'm also a big supporter of you and the organization. Mm-hmm. But I also genuinely want to help. And so when someone comes to me and asks a favor, even if it's a reasonably sized favor, generally I'm not upset about it. I'm just like, okay, cool. How can I help? Yet I am convinced that when I ask someone for something, they're going to be like, fuck that guy. You know, they take out their friends list, which we all have, and they cross off my name and they say, all right, Brian's dead. You know, I can't believe that guy asked for a simple favor. So never mind. And this is just my lemon in general, is I realize it's a total self-own to not ask for help in these cases. But in some cases, I just can't bring myself to do it. In fact, so I have this email I'm supposed to write. I was talking about this with my therapist. We have a therapy appointment tomorrow, 24 hours from now. And she was like, you better fucking write this email. And if you don't write this email, what we're going to do is we're going to use our session for you to write this email, which is my idea of hell. Because not only does it feel like a waste of money, it's also forcing me to do a thing I don't want to do. So I have to do this today. Or
I trick myself into doing, like, I'll set up, I'll be like, hey, Dr. Therapist, if I haven't done this thing by next week, I need you to be terse with me.
Yes.
And he'll never do that. It's just the internal pressure of I've told him that I have to do it. And so when I see him next, I need to have done it, or I've like broken the social contract.
Yes. No.
Does it always work? No.
I have used some of my therapy sessions to just like write a text or write an email. And it sucks. It's the worst feeling. So I want to ask Steve, how, for someone who's like a big part of your job is this something you're just kind of used to and you just feel like you need to do it? Have you always been good at it? Tell me what your thoughts are with this kind of whole thing.
Well, it all comes from the fact that I'm a really good con artist, so I'm just good at making people do stuff. No, you know, that's a half truth. The truth of it is, like, it never goes away. You never don't feel icky about asking for things. You never don't feel strange about reaching out to a friend and saying, "Hey, will you do this for me?" And no one says yes 100% of the time.
Sure, of course.
You know, Brian has not said yes to me 100% of the time. Nobody I can name for you has said yes 100% of the time.
That's right.
I view it like this, in order to make myself feel better, is I view it just like a video game. I view it that people have cooldowns. And I view whenever I ask somebody for something, whether it is a nurse to cover a shift, or it is a friend to do, you know, music for my show, or whether it's reaching out to say, you know, Brian, I need $20. Like, there's a cooldown on it. I view it as, if I haven't asked you for anything in a long time, and I've given you a lot in terms of friendship, support, love, you know, then I view it that I'm okay to ask if you can do special thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, depending on the size of that ask is how long the cooldown should be, no matter what the answer is. So, you know, I ask Ninja Brian to do a thing for me. You know, that's separate. That's a work thing. I don't view that as a personal favor. That is me asking a famous person to do a famous thing. And that is, you know, don't ask again for that kind of thing for a long time, and then give it some space, and then wait. And I think that with everyone in your life, you can kind of apply that same general principle of just allowing that space afterwards so that people don't feel used. You know, mm-hmm. it also applies to social media, where I always tell people, listen, if you want to run a successful social media account, and it's not just you posting bathroom mirror selfies, you know, just make sure that you're giving people content. Are you giving mm-hmm. them laughter? Are you making them happy? And then, okay, well, every five times you do that, ask them for something, click a link, click, you know, like whatever. Just make sure that it's a give and take relationship. And as long as it doesn't feel one-sided, then okay. And the part two of that advice is, if you're feeling that way, tell the person. Like, I have flat out said to some of my closest friends.
That's a
friends,
good advice, yeah.
I am worried that you feel like I'm using you. I want you to know that it is a deep-seated fear of mine to ever make you feel like I'm using you, because your position is powerful and you can do things for me. I don't want that. So I'm not asking you for things. But not asking is hurting what I'm trying to do. You know, I'd like to go ahead and ask you, is it okay? And then that usually leads to a conversation of how the person really feels about, you know, it's okay, or yes, you've made them feel that way in the past, or whatever, but it gets it out into the open, and then you can just move on from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the radical honesty.
I do too. That's I hadn't even considered saying how I feel.
Brian Wecht, everybody.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I also, the other thing I feel like is, you know, especially with big asks, you only get a couple of them. And it's like, do you want to, I always worry, am I blowing it on this thing? You know, like, this is the big ask from a big famous person. Do I want to blow it on this? And I think as I age and have fewer things I might want to blow it on, I try to convince myself more like, yeah, this is the time. Let's fucking do it. So that's another thing as well.
Yeah, all right, but... I mean, it is a worry, especially if it's a professional ask and you're asking another professional for a thing. It is different than asking a friend if they want to go have a coffee, because if they 100%. Say no, there's not a big loss. But if someone says yes, actually sometimes, and that's something nobody talks about, sometimes when someone says yes, it's worse than no, because now your ask is burned. Like, you asked, they said yes, and now you can't ask for anything for a while.
That's exactly
and you're aware
right.
Of this. Yeah.
100%.
So, yeah. Or, so there's that too.
Yeah, or they said yes, and then you're like, fuck, actually, I kind of need them to, you know, do this other thing, but this is the, I totally agree. Anyway, not to belabor this point, that's really useful advice. So thank you, because this is something I struggle with constantly. And it's also
Steve, Brian's therapist will also thank you.
But it is also, just to say, it is also a self-worth thing where, you know, it's like it's hard not to take a no as a they don't like me, right?
Right.
And no and they don't like me are two totally different things. And, you know, you just because someone says no to something doesn't mean they don't mm-hmm. think of you as an awesome, great person and a good friend. Mm. Could just mean they're not feeling it for whatever reason.
Or they could have been having a bad day. I mean, that's the other thing, too. Sometimes it's sure. Sometimes timing matters more than the ask, more than the question.
They don't have the bandwidth right. or whatever. Like, it's almost never no because I hate you, actually. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I don't think I've... Mm-hmm. Even though that's my worst case scenario that I fear every single time, I don't think that's actually no, that has never happened.
Yes. No. Well, I will say I have definitely said no to something because I didn't like the person. Absolutely. I have done that.
Well, yeah, of course, but I'm not going to say that.
No. That's right. So I just want to everybody who's asking people for help out there. I just want to let them know that the no, because I hate you. That's a real thing. That definitely happens. So.
I was really expecting you to be like, everybody who I've ever told no to, you know who you are, it's because I hate you.
All right. Anyway, should we move on to peaches?
Great. Yes, we shall, as my dog continues to bark, which I love and apologize for, but I am less mobile due to my ankle, so I can't just grab her and wrestle her into podcasting submission.
For context, Steve, Layden broke her foot recently and is currently healing, but she's fine.
Yeah, I fell off my roof and broke 7 bones, and it's been really fun.
Man, you should have seen the other guy, though, right?
Man. Oh, you should have seen the roof.
The hole in the concrete that I left behind. Anyway, okay, peaches. I will also go first. My peaches. First one. Last night, I got to watch our good friend Hav Hogan play Fallout New Vegas for the first time in like a decade.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron was there. Friend Alex Octopimp popped in. And it was just real chill. Just so delightful to watch Hav enjoy New Vegas.
I almost joined that voice chat, but I couldn't.
You should have.
It was Father's Day. I was with the family, but I did see y'all on there.
It has been an excellent weekend for that gamer group chat. Yes. We have just been chilling and having a great time. It was Dead by Daylight the night before.
I saw that.
It's just a treat.
Yeah.
So I love the gamer voice chat. Peach number two is that since the injury, I have not been able to sit at my desk as much. And now that I can finally sit at my desk without being in a ton of pain, I've been doing 3D modeling again, which is so fun. And I really missed doing it. So that has been very life affirming.
Great.
And then on that same note, my third peach is that had kind of a rough brain week last week and took a couple of days over the weekend to really focus on pulling myself out of it, and successful.
Great.
We did it. I read a book and did some art and talked to friends and was like, wow, life, it's fine actually.
Yeah.
Awesome. So it's nice when your attempt to pull out of the backslide or whatever works. Those are my peaches.
I love it.
Thank you.
Steve, you got some peaches for us?
I always struggle with this segment because I am this actually if Brian's weakness is asking people things, mine is being appreciative. I am the kind of guy that I told Brian this before. I'm the kind of guy that while I'm on the stage receiving an award, I'm thankful, grateful, enjoy the applause, and the moment that I'm walking off the stage, I'm going, well, shoot, now what am I going to go for next? Sure. What the hell? Because that's just the way my brain works.
Yeah. Same.
But it's interesting with this segment. It always makes me stop and feel like I have to actually think about my life for a minute. And so in preparation for this, I was really happy that speaking of Fruity Loops earlier, I was able to make my first really bad song, which is your first step to making your first not so bad song. So I was really happy about that. And I like playing with the program. There's something neat about just getting to do something that doesn't have a right or a wrong, and that's been making me feel some sense of, I don't know, when you're out of control, you know, you're like, this is the one thing you can't control is just have some chaos and music. Why not, right?
Yeah.
And then for my silly peach is that Dairy Queen came back with their Animal Cracker Blizzard. If you haven't had one yet, not sponsored.
I have not had one.
You need to get the Animal Cracker Blizzard. It is life-changing. You will never want to eat any other food on Earth again. Highly recommend.
I'm so jealous because we don't have, for some reason, in LA proper, there are no Dairy Queens.
Really?
And I've been dying for a dipped cone. Last
where
year for my birthday.
Where is the nearest Dairy Queen?
There's one maybe in a mall near the round one in Burbank? Question mark.
Yes.
For some reason, they're like, and they were closed when I went on my birthday.
Oh, look at that. There is one in Burbank. Look at that.
If you can get there, get the animal cracker for your birthday. It's great.
Oh, that sounds great. Is it like regular, like, animal cracker, or is it like the frosted animal
cracker?
It is
a regular vanilla Blizzard. They stuff in animal cracker pieces, and then they use the pink frosting to mix in with it all, so the whole thing is frosting. It is.
Oh, that looks wonderful.
It's so great. Yeah, honestly. No, if you're going to die young, you might as well eat these things. Why not?
And what's your third peach, Steve?
My third peach is I had to take a break from streaming in the wintertime. I had some family things that got real hard, and I had to shut some things down while I dealt with family. And for anybody who does any kind of career that has momentum, stopping momentum careers sucks because it takes a while to get it going again. But it's been going again now for a couple months, and it amazes me to see the spirit of humanity sometimes. I think we get lost in the toxicity of the internet sometimes, and so my biggest feature would just be how we often feel so alone in this world, but if you really look around, there are people who keep coming back and supporting you when they know where you are, and if you can be that beacon of light, then they come to you. And I think that's really great to have that kind of community. So my peach for me personally is my community itself kind of rallying together and rebuilding itself. It's nice to see that people don't give up on each other.
Yeah, that's great.
That's amazing.
I love it.
Brian.
Yes.
What are your peaches?
My peaches. Peach number one, took a little trip with Audrey last week to Lake Arrowhead, which is a mountain, as I learned, man-made mountain lake nearby. I also learned that 97% of the lakes in California are human made. So, which seemed incredibly high to me, but that's what the boat guide said. So who am I to doubt? But we had a great little dad daughter trip. And it was just nice to, you know, she was home from school, last week. School's over, camp hasn't started yet. So we just took a little trip and it was great. I love spending time with that kid. She's super fun. We spent every evening watching Doctor Who and, you know, eating takeout, and we had a great time. So that's my first peach. My second peach is, and this is a big one. I woke up this morning and the internet wasn't working. And I was like, fuck, I have a podcast recording today. The internet must work. And guess what? I just had to unplug and plug in the cable modem. And now it works just fine. But I had a moment where I was very concerned that everything would be fucked, but everything was not fucked. All I had to do was reset it. And it's always nice when a potentially bad problem just has a simple fix, right? And you're like, oh, the first thing worked. That's the greatest feeling ever. The first thing I tried worked. Wow, look at that.
You turned it off back on again, and it worked.
Indeed. That's exactly what happened. And it worked. And my final peach is I was at a gathering of people over the weekend, and I guess this was last weekend. Yeah, last weekend. And I forget how this came up, but someone said, here's how I describe Brian to people. He's the guy who shows up for things. And I was like, what a nice description.
Mm-hmm. That is so fucking true. Mm-hmm. I have heard multiple people say that about you. Mm-hmm. If that
but,
helps,
well, that's amazing. But I have never heard anyone say that, and it is not. It was like a thing that is true, that I always try to go to things that I'm invited to or people's shows or whatever. But I was like, that's such a nice compliment, especially in LA. I try to be the person who, if I say I'm going to be at a thing, I'm going to be at your thing, and I was just like, wow, that is a very kind compliment, but I think I would like to think also true. And it's interesting to me that you've heard other people say that about me, because that is a quality I endeavor to have. And it's nice to see that is true. So I was just like, wow, what a sweet compliment, which was just presented as a statement of fact. Those are the best compliments, when it's like, this is just a fact about Brian, not even presented as a compliment, but just descriptive.
It's nice to see that one actually come back around to your ears, Brian.
Yes, I was very gratified to hear that. So it's always nice to get an unexpected compliment. And that was
unexpected and also specific. I think that's why that compliment must resonate with you so much. Is like anytime anyone says anything, it's like, oh, you're really great. You immediately go, eh, whatever. But you know, someone said you show up for things. You can't deny that. You're like, I do. Yeah.
Steve, that is 100% true. If someone was like, you know, I don't know, I'll make some Brian's a smart guy. I'd be like, well, I don't know. Maybe, I guess. Am I? Yeah. You could debate that. You can't really debate that I am physically present for things. Like, that is a statement of facts. You're 100% right. It is a compliment I can't weasel my way out of, which is maybe the best kind. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, compliments you can't weasel your way out of. I'll have to consider how to best package things to people so they can't weasel their way out of
them. It's just a statement of fact. It's not an opinion. It is a fact. And
because I would say that I'm a professional compliment weaseler out of
her. That's true. Well, you and I both. It's hard to take compliments, I think, for both of us. But yeah,
I think it's why you got to be specific. Like, did you notice when I jumped on here earlier before the camera started rolling, I said to these two, like, we've podcasted before, so it's not like I've never seen them before. But instead of saying, hey, it's great to see you again, I said, oh my God, we're all wearing hats. It's like we got the memo. That's so cool. And that right there shows that we're all like together and in this against the world. And and that is how you compliment people.
Well, now
just
it seems
specific.
Calculated.
Oh, it was. But, yeah. It was.
It's the grand conspiracy.
You know what the greatest part about baseball caps? Yeah. You know what the greatest part about I find about so manipulation is using a skill where you're trying to get something out of people, right? It is the bad thing about emotion. Well, what if you took that same ability to think ahead of time, and instead of trying to get something out of someone, your objective is make them feel good.
Yeah.
Why not just turn that? Why not turn it on someone's face? That's how I do things. Like, my goal was to make y'all smile within the first minute. Did it. Mission accomplished.
You did it. I love it.
And you've made us smile through the rest of this, however long this episode has been, Steve. Yes.
And I appreciate that. Also, it's a ridiculous amount of money y'all charge per smile. Seriously, drop your rates.
Dude, it was so great to have you back. Always a pleasure to talk. Thank you for,
thank you for being so generous with your time today, Steve. Totally. It's great to see you.
I love coming back. I love talking. Y'all, you guys have the most interesting topics of all the podcasts that I do. It's y'all just talk about real, lovely, cool stuff. And I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Wow.
Also,
thanks,
a lovely and factual compliment.
Huh? Yeah. Steve, if people want to check out Able Gamers or watch your streams or anything else you want to point them towards, where should they go?
Yeah, you can check me out on all socials under Steven Spahn, S-P-O-H-N, V, like a real Steven spells their name. As you probably find me anywhere. I used to really talk hard about finding me on Twitter because it was my base of operations. Not so much since the Muskrat took it over, but I'm still there a little bit. But yeah, I'm always on social and Twitch. And I do my streaming 5 days a week, which is kind of my community building effort. It's my own little community, including my frog nights on Sunday night where we listen to music, and my community listens to Ninja Brian songs every week.
Yeah.
So yeah. I literally have a fan of Faulty Ranger who literally every week requests a Ninja Sex Party video every time. It's
amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. She loves your stuff.
I love it.
Awesome. Well, folks at home, I hope somebody gives you a really specific compliment today.
Yeah.
I'm manifesting.
I'll give everybody a compliment right now. How about this? We end with a compliment today. And I really mean this one. You guys just listened to maybe the best podcast out there.
I like it. Take that, Markiplier.
Oh, shit. Shots fired.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
No, I got to wave backwards like John Cena.
Yeah, like Cena. Yeah.
Late Night is produced by Brian Wecht and Leighton Gray. Sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/LeightonNight. Follow us on Twitter at Leighton Night, on Instagram at Leighton_Night, or email us at LeightonNight@gmail.com.